One more announcement. I want to call your attention to one more flyer that is in your bulletin that announces the Summer Leadership Institute. It is something that we are doing to invest in some very exciting young people that are in our church. These are people who are from the ages of recent high school graduates going through the undergraduate age. And we're going to be teaching them and investing them and doing showing them ministry skills throughout the summer. Any classes that they're going to be taking, and 11 of them are committed, and we need to raise some funding for these great folks, and so would ask you to consider contributing to that. And also, if those of you who are of that age and are not part of this 11, these classes are open to you as well. If you are excited about the Lord and want to learn ministry, these classes are open to you as well. Personal note, the last 3 weeks have been a little different here at Peninsula Bible Church, and we have brought with us, the services have largely been led by people from the Young Adults Fellowship and Nightlife Ministries. And they've, you know, we've done a few things differently, a few things different musically, and we've projected the words. And just thank you for receiving us, I guess. And thank you for receiving these young people and for allowing them to the grace to worship the Lord and to serve the Lord in their way. And it's a great blessing for them to be able to share their lives with you. So where have we been? We have seen that God has created us with thirsty souls, with souls of desire that long for His love, to be filled up with His love. But we've also seen that we are prone to forsake the Lord, who is called in Jeremiah the spring of living water, to dig for ourselves broken cisterns that can hold no water. We have heard Jesus cry out, "If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink." If we do so, He told us that His love will fill us beyond capacity and spill out to touch the lives of others. This morning, what we want to do is see what all of this looks like in the life of one woman, Mary of Bethany. Mary drank deeply from the love of Jesus, and there was an overflow in her life. But as one might suspect, if it is a real life, it wasn't quite that simple. There used to be a sign years ago on Highway 17 in Scotts Valley. It advertised the presence of Bethany Bible College in a denominational office. Some of you may remember the sign. It would convey spiritual messages to passing motorists. Now, if you had driven by this sign one morning, you would have looked up and seen the message, and it would have said, "Dog races." Now, you may ask yourself, what is spiritual about dog races? The answer, of course, is nothing. It seems that some college students, in the middle of the night, rearranged the letters. The original message was, "God cares." They changed "God cares" to "dog races." The message comes to us through the scriptures. God cares. But sometimes, because of the circumstances in our lives, it makes about as much sense as dog races. Mary believed that Jesus cared. But because of circumstances in her life, she began to question whether Jesus cared as she continued her journey. Turn with me to Luke chapter 10, please. Luke chapter 10, we're going to begin at verse 38. Mary appears in three scenes in the Gospels, and we are going to consider all three scenes this morning. Luke chapter 10, beginning at verse 38. As Jesus and His disciples were on their way, He came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to Him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what He said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to Him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, literally the good part, and it will not be taken away from her. Mary is seated at the feet of the Lord, listening to his word. She is absorbing what Jesus has to say. Now, there is nothing unusual about this scene. Mary is at the feet of Jesus, and this is the position that disciples would sit at. Rabbis would teach, disciples would sit at the feet, listening to what the rabbis would say. What's unusual about this is the one who is seated at the feet of Jesus. She's a woman. Only men could be disciples of rabbis. And now Mary, a woman, is seated at the feet of Jesus in the posture of a disciple. So what we have here is a rabbi-disciple relationship, but a completely unconventional one. Now, we don't know what Jesus was saying, but we do know that he wasn't saying something like this. Mary, what are you doing at my feet? Don't you know that this is the place where disciples sit? Don't you know that this is the place where men sit? You're a woman. Go help your sister. He doesn't say that, we know. It would be expected that the place for a woman would not be at the feet of a rabbi, but in the kitchen. And Jesus says that Mary has chosen the good part, the part of a disciple. And when it's suggested that it is the wrong place for her to be, he defends her right to be there, and he says, I won't let anyone take your place away from you. Think what this must have meant to Mary. She is probably a former day Yentl, growing up as a young girl, loving the scriptures, loving the things of God. When rabbis would come through, she would long to listen to them. And every time she listened a little bit too intently, she was probably told to go back to the kitchen. At every turn, she was told what good girls do and don't do. Now, if you've ever been denied something because of your sex, because of your race, because of your age, or because of something else beyond your control, you can identify with Mary. Jesus invites Mary to take her position at his feet. And he affirms her desire. Everyone has told her throughout her whole life that this desire is bad. And now Jesus says the desire to be a disciple is not bad, but good. He has not only become her rabbi, he has become her champion. And we can only imagine at this point, Mary is drinking deeply from the love of Jesus. Now, maybe you, at some point in your life, listened to the words of Jesus. Maybe you opened your heart to him. And maybe at some point in your life, he filled your life with faith and with hope and love. And it seems like nobody loved you like Jesus. Well, all is well with this new world that Mary has entered. But that world is about to be shaken. Please turn to John chapter 11 to continue the story of Mary. John chapter 11, eventually we're going to begin at verse 28. But let me give you a little bit of background before we jump in. Mary and her sister Martha had a brother by the name of Lazarus who became sick. They send word from their home in Bethany to Jesus, hoping that Jesus will come and heal their brother as he had healed others. Yet curiously, when Jesus gets this urgent message, the text tells us that he stayed where he was 2 days longer. Eventually he heads to Bethany, but by the time he gets there, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days.
When word comes to the sisters that Jesus is heading to Bethany, Martha goes out to meet Jesus. But Mary stays behind. She has been deeply affected by the tardiness of Jesus. And it is going to take a special request on his part in order for her to go out to him. Well, Jesus opened up for Mary an entirely new world, but now that world is shaking. Mary has lost her brother. And Jesus, who is the only one who could have done something to prevent the loss, took his own sweet time about responding. Seemingly didn't lift a finger to help. So she must be entertaining some pretty serious questions at this point. The message that was sent to Jesus was, "The one you love is sick." Question, is this how he responds to the people that he loves? Question, does he really care for me? Question, was I a fool to ever think that I could be a disciple of the great rabbi? He moves toward her, moving toward Bethany, but she holds her ground. She has determined that it is best at this point to keep a safe distance from Jesus, lest she get burned again. Now he's coming to Bethany? He couldn't possibly be coming for me. Well, what kind of loss have you suffered? Have you lost a marriage? Have you lost whatever passion you had in your marriage? Have you lost some other cherished relationship? Have you lost your job? Have you lost your health? Have you lost an opportunity? Do you look back and say, there was this opportunity that I wished I had grabbed. There's this job that I wished I had taken. There was this phone call I really should have made. There are these lips I really should have kissed. Have you lost hope? Maybe you're asking the questions. Why didn't Jesus intervene? He could have intervened, but he didn't. Was I a fool to give my heart to him? Does he care for me at all? Does he even exist if he doesn't really respond so promptly? You see, what may be even more devastating than your loss is the thought that Jesus, the only one really who could have done something to prevent the loss, sat on his hands and didn't do a thing. And we question whether we were fools to give our hearts to him. Perhaps. He moves toward us, but we hold our ground. We determine that it is best to keep a safe distance between Jesus and ourselves, lest we get burned again. Problem with this. He's the fountain of living water. He is the one who satisfies our thirst. We keep our distance from him. We're thirsty. Solution? Dig a cistern. Mary, in her trauma and in her loss, may already be looking for a shovel. Then Martha returns from her encounter with Jesus with a short, simple message that changes the course of Mary's life. And it's like that, isn't it? Short, simple messages are the ones that often have the most power to change a life. Let's pick up the story, John chapter 11, beginning at verse 28. And after she had said this, this is after Martha said this to Jesus in her encounter with Jesus outside Bethany, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Martha tells Mary that the teacher is here. There are more significant titles for Jesus than teacher, but for Mary, this is the most significant. Jesus is the rabbi. Jesus is the teacher who opened this world for her, who opened the world of discipleship for her, the world that she always longed to enter. The teacher. Do you remember Mary Magdalene, a different Mary, how she responded at the resurrection of Jesus when she finally recognized the resurrected Lord? Do you remember what she said? One word, Rabboni, which means rabbi or teacher. The title meant everything to women who had the door of discipleship opened to them by Jesus. Now, what does the teacher want? The teacher is here. What does he want? Now, remember, Mary in her grief and her loss and her questions about Jesus is thinking that if he's coming to Bethany, there's no way that he's coming to see me. And the message is, the teacher is here, Mary, and is asking for you. And this addresses her deepest questions. This addresses the questions about whether he cares or not. Yeah, it seems like he does care. He is coming to Bethany, and he's coming for me. How does she respond? She gets up quickly. Earlier, she wouldn't budge. Now, she gets up quickly, and she is there. In a flash. It seems that even in her grief, even in her suffering, even in her loss, she is waiting for the slightest indication that Jesus cares. And when she hears it, she's up and out of there. But she is still grief-stricken. Because she's lost her brother. And she falls at the feet of Jesus and says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And she weeps. And how does Jesus respond to this? The text says he is deeply moved in spirit and troubled, and he weeps. These are the deepest words in the language to convey sorrow and grief. And when Jesus sees the sorrow of Mary, there is a volcanic eruption in his heart over her grief. Now, Jesus has plans to give Mary a larger faith. He really did delay his departure to Bethany because he loved Mary and her family. You see, Mary believes that Jesus can heal the sick. Jesus allows her to go through this trauma to show her that he can raise the dead. So Mary's trauma is not the end of the story. The trauma of the world is not the end of the story. Your trauma is not the end of the story. What are we to say when the storyline takes awful turns and there is great suffering and there is great loss? Based on John chapter 11, we are to say this. The author isn't finished yet. David Wilcox echoes this in a song that he has written. Listen to the lyrics. "Look, if someone wrote a play just to glorify what's stronger than hate, would he not arrange the stage to look as if the hero came too late? He's almost in defeat. It's looking like the evil side will win. So on the edge of every seat, from the moment that the whole thing begins, it is love who makes the mortar, and it's love who stacked these stones. And it's love who made the stage here, although it looks like we're alone. In this scene set in shadows, like the night is here to stay, There is evil cast around us, but it's love that wrote the play. And in this darkness, love will show the way. Jesus is going to expand her faith. But in this encounter, just outside of Bethany, he restores her faith. All she needed to hear was that Jesus came for her. All she needed to see was a tear in his eye. So when you suffer loss, don't start getting the shovel. Don't start digging that cistern. Don't try to figure out how you're going to satisfy your thirst. Instead, hear the message from Jesus. The teacher is here and is asking for you. See? Get up quickly. Go to him. Fall at his feet. If it's in your heart, weep. Now, look up. What do you see? You see that he is deeply moved in spirit and troubled. You see that he is weeping. You see that he is crying for you. You see that he cares for you very much. You see a volcanic eruption in the heart of Jesus because of your loss. Several years ago, I was at a retreat with about 20 others. And as part of this retreat, each of us shared the stories of our lives. And, of course, every story has a little bit of difficulty, right? And I was seated as I was telling my story. And as I got up, I was emotionally drained. I was a little disoriented. And what I had noticed is that there was a brother who was across the room, and he had walked up to me. And his face was about 8 inches from me. And I just kind of walked up, and there he is. And he didn't say a word. He looked at me right in the eye. His eyes were red. His eyes were moist. And tears were crawling down his cheek. He didn't say anything. But I knew that he cared, right? And at that point, it was very helpful for me to know that somebody cared. And that's Jesus, right? Jesus cares. He weeps with us. Well, Jesus has a plan for your loss that you don't know about. If you saw it now, it wouldn't make sense. When you see it later, it will take your breath away. Know that Jesus has that plan, but before you see it unfold, go out to him. Pour your heart out to him. Fall at his feet. Well, when we drink from the love of Jesus, what happens? Streams of living water flow from us. Those streams flow from Mary in the final scene. Move ahead one chapter to John chapter 12. John chapter 12, beginning at verse 8. I'm sorry, verse 1. John chapter 12, verse 1. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus arrived at Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. What Mary is doing is taking the normal hospitality customs of the day and taking them to the extreme. If you were a special guest, your head would be anointed with oil. And regular guests were offered water for their feet so they could wash their feet, or perhaps a Gentile slave would be instructed to carry out the foot washing operation. Never would a Jewish slave be called on to do this. And so Mary anoints not the head of Jesus. She anoints his feet. And she doesn't use oil. She uses perfume that is worth a year's wages. And then, shockingly, in that culture, she unbinds her hair. And she gets down on her hands and knees. And she wipes the feet of Jesus with her hair. And John says that the fragrance of the perfume filled the house. She probably doesn't know about this. And she also, in some way, some mysterious way, prepared Jesus for his burial. She definitely doesn't know that this is what she's doing. She is marvelously self-unaware. She is simply worshiping at the feet of Jesus. She is adoring him and worshiping him. And others in the house are being blessed, including Jesus. And she really doesn't even know it. The love of Jesus has dissolved the fears in her life. And here is the overflow. Others are blessed. Judas, however, does not count himself among the blessed. He says the reasonable thing. You could have taken this perfume and just sold it and the proceeds be given to the poor. Of course, what he was really interested in was lining his own pockets. Jesus says to Judas, leave her alone. Well, this is what happens when we drink from the love of Jesus. There is this flow. His love pours into us, fills us to capacity, and flows out of us. And this flow seems to be an irrepressible, unavoidable thing. And when we know we're loved by Jesus, we forget about duty, and we forget about responsibility and decorum and expectations and conventions. We're oblivious to all of that. And we just want to love Jesus. We just want to worship him. We just want to adore him. We become marvelously self-unaware. We are so results-oriented, aren't we? Everything we do, it seems to be designed to get some kind of result. In workplaces, in the church, and everything else. And Mary is having this amazing result that she's not even aware of. She's just loving Jesus. I got a hunch that if we just love Jesus and worship him, the results would be unbelievable, and we probably wouldn't even know about it. Well, Mary appears in the Gospels in three scenes. But if you notice something interesting, three scenes, one position. She's always at the feet of Jesus. In scene one, she hears the heart of Jesus. In scene two, she opens her heart to Jesus. And in scene three, she gives her heart to Jesus. But if you also notice that there's always something or someone trying to keep her from the feet of Jesus. In scene one, it's Martha who appeals to the expectations of the day. In scene two, it's Mary's own disappointment which appeals to her fear. In scene three, it's Judas who appeals to reason. Now, Jesus has a response to each of these responses. In the first scene, he says, this place of Mary's, this place at my feet, will not be taken from her. In scene two, she is immobilized by her disappointment and her fear, and Jesus calls to her. In scene three, he says to Judas, leave her alone. Be advised that if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, there will always be something or someone who is trying to keep you from the feet of Jesus. Values will bombard you from without and rise up from you within to keep you from the feet of Jesus. But if the feet of Jesus is where you want to be, do you understand what Jesus is saying to you this morning? His feet is where you belong. Go out to him. Place yourself at his feet. Listen to his heart. Open your heart. Give him your heart. Now, there are such strong connections between Mary's life and Psalm 23 that it is not too much of a stretch to think that that psalm inspired this amazing act of devotion in the final scene. Don't have to turn there, but let me read the psalm to you. I'm sure most of you are familiar with it, and make a few comments. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. After all that Mary has been through, what more could she want but Jesus? He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. Jesus has drawn Mary to himself, where she has been nourished. He restores my soul. Mary, who came to Jesus but was disappointed by Jesus, has now been restored. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Jesus didn't come when she expected him to come, but now she knows that he was guiding her even then. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Jesus has walked with Mary through the valley of the shadow of death, her brother's death, and offered comfort to her by weeping with her. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. Jesus has flown in the face of custom to invite Mary to his table as a disciple. Truly, he has anointed her head with oil. My cup overflows. Jesus has anointed her head, but she anoints his feet. And there is this overflow. The cup overflows. And the fragrance of the perfume fills the entire house. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Mary is extending hospitality here to Jesus. Amazing hospitality. But she knows whose house she is dwelling in. Well, if you follow your heart, brothers and sisters, if you follow your heart, your journey will take you again and again to the feet of Jesus, where you listen to his heart, where you open your heart, and where you give him your heart. Well, from Mary of Bethany to Edmund of Mountain View, Ed Wong is going to come up and share with us a little bit. You know, sometimes you understand the love of God in some really strange ways and unexpected ways. And that happened for Ed at one point in his life recently. And he's going to share with you about that. And then when you understand your love, you've got to do something with this stuff, right? Well, Ed's done a few things. He's going to share with you about a young adult's missions trip that he led for us to Belize. So, Ed, why don't you come on up?
So my name is Ed Wong, and I've been living in the Valley for about 2 years, and even though I'm a non-techie in engineer land, I have a very analytical mind, and I have the kind of mind that's always going, always thinking, goes on and on. I'm trying to analyze everything, and when things aren't going so great, it's not such a great thing, because you're like trying to analyze your questions, your problems, and you ask a lot of questions that never really wind up getting resolved. So about a year ago, things were not going so well for me. Things were just kind of rough at work. A relationship wasn't going real well. And I was just pretty down in general. So I was pretty depressed at that time. So one day I'm driving out my car, and I get to the intersection of Rexdorf and Central. And you know how long that light can be. So I'm like, you know, parked there in my car and thinking some more. And then all of a sudden I hear this voice, and it says, "You can't possibly know how much I love you." So I was just awestruck by that. And when you're in the presence of God and just realize how much God loves you, all your problems and all your answered questions don't seem important anymore. So that's what my poem is about. It's called Perspective. My soul is wandering within me, ceaselessly searching for fulfillment in a quest that reaps no reward. This longing saps my strength. Shriveled like a withered leaf, I am tossed by the wind, not knowing where my destination lies. Muddled confusion breaks over me, churning questions abound unanswered. The yearning unsettles my being. But yet, in the midst of this stormy turbulence, a quiet, unconditional love sweeps over me, offering a foundation upon to plant my feet, a fortress to shield me from my fears, an anchor to ensure that I will never wander too far. Though the waves do not cease to crash, and the enigmas still seek resolve, they become meaningless in the presence of this overwhelming love that refuses to let me go. So like Scott mentioned, when you're just filled by the love of God, you can't help but try to give some of it back. So out of this, we had this mission trip to Belize, and we just got back maybe 2-3 weeks ago. So 13 of us from the Young Adults Fellowship went down to Belize, and Belize is a country in Central America, borders Guatemala and Mexico. And even though Belize is probably known by most people as like a tourist resort, people go out to the islands and they snorkel, and it's really pretty there. But in the mainland, it's really a pretty poor country, so that's where we spent our time. So what we did was we did some construction work to dig a foundation and to pour concrete for an adult education center. And we also had the opportunity to spend some time at an orphanage, and these kids were pretty love-starved, so it was really great that some of us could spend time with them and, you know, just kind of hugging the kids and just showing how much we love them. And we also had the opportunity to witness at an outdoor outreach at a marketplace, and Chi Wong, one of the members of our team, gave his testimony, and Scott Grant preached at this outreach. So even though 13 of us, we were all very different skills and different talents, all of us got to use our different gifts and talents, and it was just a really great opportunity to serve. Some other highlights for me was that we got to spend an evening at host families in the village. And so these families were pretty poor, basically one-room shacks, dirt floors, chickens and dogs running in and out. It was pretty interesting. I don't think many of us got much sleep that night, but it's just a real blessing for us, and seeing that even though these people were so poor, they were really happy. And actually my host, we went to church that night, and he was good friends with the pastor, but he never really attended church that much. But that evening he went and he accepted Christ. So that was really neat. And also, another person who went on this trip with us, someone who is a member of our young adults group. So she's been seeking in our group for a couple of years now, and we've been praying for her. But during this trip, she accepted Christ, and the next day, she and two other people got baptized in a very scenic creek called Jaguar Creek. So overall, it was a really great blessing. And I think from the beginning, none of us knew what to expect. We expected the worst in terms of, you know, things being really rustic, the work being very hard. In a lot of sense, it was. It was hard work, and, you know, things weren't always ideal at all times. But even though we came to serve, I think the blessings that we got and all the encouragement that we had from the people there, the relationships that we developed, being encouraged by all the ministries and seeing how all the ways that God is working down in Belize, we are just so incredibly blessed. So overall, even though we came to serve, we came to love, the blessings that we receive are so much greater than anything that we could possibly give. And to me, that's the nature of God's love. We receive God's love, we give it back, but then we receive so much back in return. So thank you.
Well, so like Mary, we drink from the love of Jesus, and it spills out of us and touches the lives of others. And we become to some degree like Jesus, seeking out those places of need. As N.T. Wright says, our tears passes the cloth onto us and bids us to go and dry another's tears. So we go out seeking those places of need. We go to Bethany, comfort the weeping sister. We enter the tomb of the brother, and we go to the orphans of Tijuana, and we go to the villagers of Belize, and we go to the refugees of Kosovo. We go upstairs to the teenager who is trying to find her way, and we go downstairs to the little boy who needs a hug. We go to the down and outers, and we go to the up and outers. We go to the parched places of this earth where they are thirsting for a few drops of living water. But we don't go alone. Remember John 7, verse 39? You know, he who drinks from me, who believes in me, from his innermost being shall flow rivers of living water. But this he spoke of the Spirit. We take with us the Spirit of Jesus, who groans with us, who inspires us, who leads us to pour out our lives the way Mary poured out that vial of perfume. May the fragrance of our love for Jesus fill this house today. The teacher is here and is asking for you.